Tell me, Rose, about growing up in Kentucky as a child and a young person.
Sure. Well, you know, growing up in Kentucky, one thing was there was always family around, and that was big. That was kind of everything. My father's side of the family, he just told lots and lots of stories. And always part of his story was how wonderful his mother was. That's my grandmother, the subject of this play. And always part of the story was the fact that she had been quite a rebel and had married a Japanese man, which was really unthinkable at that time. It's kind of hard to put yourself in those shoes, but it was absolutely not in anyone's wheelhouse, you know, and shocked everybody. So,
Did you know your grandmother, or was she passed by the time you were around?
No, I never knew her or any of my grandparents, so I never met any of these people.
What, can you remember as a child or a teenager when you were told these stories about this, in some circles, outrageous thing she did? What were your thoughts? Were you intrigued, or were you like, oh, that's just my grandmother?
Well, I probably went back and forth. Probably in my teens, I wasn't all that interested, but it logged in the back of my head. I think the thing that really got me was he would smile at me, and he would smile and say, you remind me of her. You would have loved my grandmother, and I just got this warm feeling, and so I felt like I wanted to know her. The Japanese part was always fascinating to me because it kind of gave me something to tell the other kids at school. So maybe they had this, or they had a big car, or they had something, but I was a quarter Japanese.
Tell us a little bit about your grandmother before she met this young man. What you know of her from a personality standpoint, where she lived, of what means she was.
Sure. Well, I just want to say up front that I did a lot of oral history when my father died in 1987, and a lot of what I got from her that complemented what my dad had told me came from these people, her contemporaries, and that was real gold. She grew up with great affluence, really a lot, and so that was that. That was part of that. More importantly, I think she was part of a family that was an old Kentucky family and kind of powerful. And they were accustomed to doing things a certain way, and I think she really, her instinct was to do the opposite of whatever they thought should be done, right? One cousin told me that she was just known for her temper, flat out, that she would have migraine headaches that would literally put her out for weeks at a time. The family did have a pet goat. They named it Ollie after her, so you kind of get the picture here. So I think it sounds like by the time this handsome Japanese man appeared, she was really ready. She was ready for a change. She was ready for some kind of escape. Very, very smart, clearly. He was known to be brilliant. I mean, even after, you know, I don't want to give away too much, but for the rest of his life, he was known to be incredibly brilliant. I think she was every bit as smart. I was told she chose books for him to read, that sort of thing. So she just didn't fit in,
You know? When you say wealth, where'd the wealth come from?
Well, some of it was landed gentry, I suppose you would say, but then there were people in the family. Her brother, from my understanding, was a really good farmer, really good person with money. But her ancestors had just bought this land. They came from Virginia and managed to kind of grow it, you know, that sort of thing. So she was lucky in that regard, very lucky.
She's described in these wonderful newspaper articles, by the way, thank you for sending those because they're a great resource, being called the Belle of the Bluegrass. Where did that title come from?
I have to laugh. I suspect it came from some newspaper reporter. What I heard about her was never that she was this incredible bluegrass belle. It's quite possible she was, and I didn't know it, but that was not the story I heard coming up. I did not hear stories about, oh, she had so many suitors, she had to turn them away, they were knocking each other down, they were, you know, this man beat out all the others. My guess is there were plenty of parents who would have loved for her to have been their daughter-in-law. So there probably were meetings, but the sense that she was this blooming belle, I don't think she was, while she was certainly very beautiful in my eyes and attractive, I don't think she was conventionally beautiful. I think that was kind of probably made up, and it makes a great story.
Sure. So embellished that part of it, but the part of being The L.A. Record said one of the wealthiest and oldest families in Kentucky. Is that true?
That is. That is not an exaggeration, yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about her and this young man and their first meeting. And I know that we're going to hear during your performance, but just for background at least, how did they meet?
So there's a tiny log cabin church in Bourbon County, Kentucky. It's actually a historic sign. It's called Cane Ridge Shrine, Cane Ridge Meeting House. You're nodding. Everyone in Kentucky will know of it, others not so much. And it was an active church at that time. My grandfather was in the seminary in Lexington. Mm-hmm. He had been brought to the United States by a missionary from Kentucky. So he was just brought back to Kentucky, and he was in the seminary, Lexington College of the Bible. He was invited out to preach at Cane Ridge just as a young seminary student. My grandmother was teaching Sunday school that day. And they were introduced, and the family invited him to dinner at their estate. And from what I can tell, everyone was just taken with him. They were really smitten. He was so smart, so charming, so probably very sophisticated looking, and he wasn't sophisticated, so it's kind of a credit to him that he was able to pull that off. But, you know, she was smitten right away.
What was his name? Because I want to have you pronounce it, and also their ages at this time. It sounds like that they were fairly young.
My grandmother was actually 28, so of course that was probably considered old not to have been married. I cannot tell you his exact age, but I do know there's 1 year difference between them. I honestly don't remember who was the older, but there was just 1 year age difference.
And how do you pronounce his name?
Yutaka Minakuchi.
Say that again.
Sure. Yutaka, Yutaka. Minakuchi, Minakuchi. He is highly Googleable, okay? Lots of stuff about him on the internet if people are interested.
He is described by the papers, and maybe this is embellished as well, but as being a pretty educated young man, had spent several years in Kentucky in college, had been somewhat well-traveled, wealthy, and as one sentence in the story said, partially of royal blood, or partly of royal blood. Is all that true?
Well, most of it is true. He was educated. Of course, he attended, you know, College of the Bible, and I think was a voracious reader. I mean, he did speak 12 languages at the time that they met. That's kind of a lot of languages when you're 28, 29. Read and wrote seven, including Sanskrit. I mean, he was unbelievable. I did happen to get hold of his master's thesis at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. The English is impeccable, truly, and it was so complex I had difficulty reading it.
Wow.
Okay? This is a man writing in his second language. The part about the nobility, I have not gotten to the bottom of that.
Okay.
I have not gotten to the bottom of that. I know that he had a sword. Mm-hmm. This is not in the play. And my father remembers when they were low on money, he would take one of the jewels from the sword and pawn it. Where he got it, I don't know. I will add a little backstory. One of my Japanese cousins got this information. My grandfather, his parents were killed. We don't know how. They died when he was pretty young. And he got adopted by his aunt. So I think it was his mother's sister. And they were a well-to-do family. They were later connected to Mitsubishi, so they were very well off. The only problem is that his adoptive mother.
And when we say he, you're talking
Yutaka,
about the young man.
Yutaka, young Yutaka, my grandfather, yes. Young Yutaka was their son. His adoptive mother then became pregnant. When she became pregnant and had her biological son, his existence was kind of wiped off the record. And I'm told that in Japan, if you're not on paper, you're not really much. So while I'm sure they were kind to him, and he still certainly was connected, even when he came here, well connected, I don't think he really had any money to speak of.
Falling in love at first sight, that's a pretty dramatic statement. From over 100 years ago. Do we know, in fact, or how do you know that was the case?
Oh, well, I wish I knew a lot of things. You know, my guess is that she was completely taken because he was good-looking. I have seen pictures. And he had so many of the things that I suspect her father had, which was really smart, worldly, a little bit of a different idea. What he thought, I just think of him as really inexperienced, even though he came across as kind of cool and so on. He was not experienced. He came over here on a ship. He was a young man. They literally brought by a missionary, said, hey, you're in Kentucky now. So my guess is he liked her. He liked her intellect. I don't think it hurt that she had a pile of money, you know.
So your mother, mm-hmm. daughter.
My grandmother.
Your grandmother. But I'm talking about your grandmother's mother, so that would have been your great-grandmother.
Yes.
Did she approve of this, at least the initial situation here with them meeting and coming to dinner and so forth?
That's the $600 question. Yes, my great-grandmother approved. The whole family apparently approved. This was told to me by a woman named Elizabeth Steele, who was quite old at the time, but she knew the family, and she said she remembered the dinner on that Sunday when they asked him for Sunday dinner. She said, we loved him. He was fantastic. Everyone loved him until he wanted to marry into the family. And that's a direct quote. And that was when things changed.
Let's talk about that. First of all, this is 2023. And even today, mixed, quote, racial marriages can sometimes, for some people, be a problem. Others, it's part of life. Take us back to 1903. And she's with a Japanese man in terms of not just dating, but marrying at some point.
That clearly was the line that was crossed, that you could not cross, that would make him a member of the family, and that would introduce his blood, just to be very graphic about it, into their white, we think, white, you know, family, and that was intolerable. My grandmother's uncle did hold a meeting of the men. They talked about killing him. Very viable option, I'm told. One cousin spoke out against it, and that cousin was Woodford Buckner. He happened to be a tenor. Those are the two things that they knew about him. So I have a fond feeling for Woodford Buckner in my heart, you know. But it was really very serious, very serious. So getting back to my great-grandmother, and I love that question, her mother was so traditional. Her pictures, she just looks very staged, she, you know, well-dressed, and keep your mouth shut kind of thing, but she really took action. She contacted her brother in Blue Lick Springs, Kentucky. They were part of the Lindsay branch of the family. The Lindsays were open-minded. Mm-hmm. Uncle Frank Lindsay apparently was, you know, kind of an eccentric, and they said, come on. So they literally all went, my great-grandmother, my grandmother, my grandfather, they went to Blue Lick Springs. I think they fled, really, Blue Lick Springs. Uncle Frank Lindsay had inherited a 32-room house from his ancestor, Major George Michael Bettinger, if anyone wants to look that up. And it had 32 rooms, which I learned from another source. So plenty of room to stay. They were married there.
In Blue Licks.
In Blue Licks. My father was born in that house. So, you know, I have a chair. You would say I was laid in that chair when I was, you know, born. So clearly a midwife was there. And my guess is they didn't leave the house. They didn't really have to. And they were in this protected environment. I think it must have been really quite lovely. He then, Utaka, we don't know if he graduated from Transy. I'm thinking probably not. But he applied to Yale and got into Yale Divinity. So the first time they left was for him to go to Yale to Divinity School.
So your great-grandmother, Olivia, marries the Japanese man. Your grandmother, Olivia, marries the Japanese man, and they have a child mm-hmm. who is your dad.
Yes.
So if they had not married, you wouldn't be here.
Exactly.
How does that hit you?
Oh, I just want to cry. I want to laugh. It's astonishing to me. It's such a... You know, I think some kind of divine order there. It's hard for me to believe any of those unlikely circumstances were an accident. You know, I loved my dad. He was extraordinary. And he was half Japanese and had a Japanese name for the first 17 years of his life. Can you imagine that?
Wow. So you talked a little bit about the private scandal in the family. What about in public? I mean, were they ostracized? Were they looked down upon in public? I assume they were holding hands in public or walking together, simple things we take for granted.
I didn't find out until much later, when my father was really near death, that I think they were treated pretty badly. I had visited Asheville, North Carolina, a beautiful place. We had a video camera at the time, and I shot some footage out the car window at the house where they had lived. I thought, won't this be fun? And when I started to show it to my father, he just got really quiet, and he said, people weren't very nice to us in Asheville. Then I came across more newspaper clippings and everything, and then, of course, my grandfather was interned. I think it must have been really, really rough.
Really. Although I noticed with the L.A. Record, that long story about this marriage between the reigning belle of the bluegrass and this Zion of the Japanese family, there seems to be nothing negative in that story about the two of them marrying. Did you notice that?
Yes, and it's a great point. I can't explain it, other than to say that, I don't know, I can't explain it. I suppose if you're going to be at that level and the aristocracy, they're not talking about this outside the family, probably. If you hold a meeting where you're going to kill the guy, you're probably not advertising that. So possibly when they went out into the world, maybe nobody knew.
But literally going back to that point you just brought up, there are members of your family that thought seriously about murdering the Japanese man before they could get married. Do I have that right?
Yes. My sense from a cousin, Catlett Buckner, who told me was they absolutely were going to kill him. And that the one person really had to really argue against it. No, I'm sure they would have. It was absolutely unthinkable. Can I tell one more quick story? Mm-hmm. So it was hard for me to gather all this, but just to get a sense of what it would mean to those in that town in Kentucky for someone like him to be there. A friend of my dad's came to my dad's funeral. He marched right up to me and said, are you his daughter? I said, yeah. He said, let me tell you about the first time I met him. They were in grade school. He said, hi, my name is, I think his name was Stuart McCrae. What's your name? My dad said, Yutaka Minakuchi. He said, what kind of name is that? My dad said, Japanese. Stuart said, well, what does that mean? My father said, oh, it means he's from Japan. Stuart said, what is Japan? My father explained to him it was a country. And Stuart is telling me this, he's 80, this was true.
Didn't know where Japan was.
I'm sure they maybe got taught in class somewhere, it was on an atlas, but no sense of that, no sense of someone like that coming to this community, no.
So they had your dad, did they have any other children?
No, just him. Yeah.
And so, do I have this right, 11 years later, they divorce.
Actually, that's not how it happened. They did separate 11 years older.
Okay.
I have condensed things in the play for the sake of structure and other things. What happened was that he really disappeared, and this airs in April. I can go ahead and tell. So he just disappeared. He left. I'm guessing they were both described as having bad tempers, really bad tempers. I'm guessing they had an argument. He left, and really nobody knew where he was. There's no internet at this time. You cannot find him. She didn't know where he went. So the judge, the local judge, apparently could not grant her a divorce until she waited 7 years. So she and my dad just waited 7 years kind of to start her new life. After 7 years, she was granted a divorce in his absence.
He never appeared during all that time?
Oh, no. He never even responded to the petition. I have a couple of newspaper clippings. I mean, he was in the United States. He was being active. No response at all.
Mm-mm. And did he ever appear again to the family?
He did. He contacted my father. I'm not sure when, but I got his FBI file. I got my dad's FBI file. And my father had said he did ask me to come on the train. I did meet he had a second wife and a second family. I think my dad did meet his wife, but that was probably the one and only time.
Did your dad change his name back to American?
He did. He and my grandmother changed their name back to Buckner, her maiden name. And again, this appears to have happened around the time of the divorce. She took Olivia Buckner, which was her name. My father chose the name John from a friend. His middle name was Lindsay. Yeah, they changed their names.
So your dad's full name, after he changed it, was?
Was John Lindsay Buckner. Yeah.
It's a fascinating story, but this is your life and your family, and you're making it very public. And not only are you making it public, but you're on stage performing it in front of people, strangers mostly, or some of them. Why?
I can see you've been a reporter for a while. I love this. Oh, goodness. Well, it kind of went in stages. The overriding theme was she struck me as wonderful. When I really learned, the more I learned about her, I was going to write a book about my dad. You may want to cut this, but that's the book I discussed with your father, the late David Dick, the wonderful David Dick. It was all going to be about my dad. That kind of morphed into a play. But I admired her more and more the more I learned about her. I thought, okay, she kind of thumbed her nose at this very powerful family of which she was a part. She didn't hate these people. She loved these people. She was part of that family, but she said no, like young people do, right? She gave it all up. She had enough money to hang around for a while. He leaves. She has to come to Kentucky to be, because they lived all in the same area in Paris. She has to face those people that said, I told you so. We knew it. We knew it wouldn't last. She has to bring my father up, this strange-looking boy. He was adorable, but he was strange-looking. And she has to not be bitter. She has to not pass that on to him. So when Daddy would talk about her with this light in his eyes, there was never any mention of, oh, she grieved, oh, she hated this, it was ruined her life. Nothing like that. He did say she loved him till the day she died. But that was it. And when I saw that that had happened, and she also lost her father at a very young age, she was 16, there was something pretty special about this woman. So I really had to dig into that.
So, again, because you feel like it sounds like it's a story about her that needs to be told, specifically because of her and what she went through.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That resolve was only strengthened when I found out that my grandfather's name is very prominent in history. On the one hand, I'm delighted, you know, that we have the internet, that everyone's digitizing stuff. That's fantastic. He was a fantastic person, larger than life, but her life would really be invisible if it were not for me. And I think it was a story worth telling, that she followed her heart, that she really did what she thought was right at the time. They had my father, who was a fantastic human being, and so I guess part of the reason that I'm telling the story is for both of my parents. I'm telling it for him, you know. They can't be here, so...
Do I have this right that once she married him, she was ostracized from her family and lost all of her wealth?
She did not lose her wealth. No. No, they spent her wealth. No, she did not lose her wealth. That's a very good question. No, she wasn't cut off. She had her assets.
But they, the family? Was she cut off from them? And did she move away?
She did move away. They moved away very quickly. I think once they went to Blue Lick Springs... It seems like it's the same state, but I think it was a whole nother milieu. Once she left Bourbon County, I think they traveled, and he was prominent on the Chautauqua circuit, so he lectured, and they moved from Chautauqua site to Chautauqua site along the East Coast. So I think they traveled really until he left, and then they moved back.
Any particular message, given the 2023 year we're in, to the people that are listening to your performance tonight and other nights?
This took me a really... It took me a very long time to write, to my satisfaction. I worked on this script for 17 years. It's kind of ridiculous, but it was worth it to me. I wanted to get it right. I feel really good about the script. But this is something, not only was I sort of, you know, we get these gifts from our parents, gifts in quotes, some are good and some not so good. This was one I wanted to keep. I carried it from the time I was a child. I worked 17 years on the script. Never in a million years did I think, when I first did this first production of the script that the script, that the first draft of the script, never did I think in 2005 that in 2023 our country would be involved in anti-Asian sentiment that is burning issue, not just an issue, not just an issue from the past, but it is smoldering. It is on fire. Never did I dream that. Never did I dream that the whole racial problems would be really in our face. So I do think there is a divine meaning in the timing. I didn't plan to wait this long. I planned to finish it in 2005. So what is my message? My message is that I think stories, individual stories, are really important. It's so easy. We all do it. Go on the phone. I'm addicted to my phone like everyone else. It's so easy to click on stuff and read opinions. But I feel like sometimes it's important to look someone in the eye. What do I think of this person? Not what does someone else tell me I should think? And to go back to really connecting with individuals and telling stories.
Great answer. If you were able to see your grandfather, the Japanese young man, today, would you want to see him? Would you want to hug him? Would you want to hit him? Would you want to... Just play with me here. What do you think?
Well, I wouldn't want to hit him. I think that if I saw him as a young man, I would have a lot of compassion. I think I would probably see how scared he was. I can't imagine going through what he did, really kind of just being raised. Like you're lifted up in a crane and you're dropped off in another planet. I'm sure there would be anger. I'm sure I would have questions. From the descriptions of him, I'm not sure I'd get any answers. but, you know, my goal is forgiveness. I have to practice what I preach. It's been hard, but, you know, I'll also say learning, because I did meet his second family and they were lovely at that time, learning more about him, and it all gets back to what did it say about me, and that helped me to forgive. Because I was getting all of this wonderful information about me.
Yeah.
Is that kind of a non-answer? I'm not sure.
No, that's good. That's good. I'm trying to process it all. It's a fascinating story. I'm about ready to wrap this up. I guess there. Just want to be clear on this. There's no evidence of any physical abuse of her by him or verbal abuse, because at that time, I think I have this correct, women really had very few rights, and were seen almost like property to a second-class citizen, quite frankly.
No, there's no evidence of physical abuse or any abuse of that kind that would have made her want to leave and not being able to leave. I think that's what you're implying, because so many women were in situations like that. If anything, I think she had the upper hand a lot of the time because it was her money, and she was such a strong personality. But one thing I tried to put into the play was I'm sure that there was a dance that they did. You know, I'm sure she was domineering and then pulled back. I think she probably tried to defer to him. I think she probably was not able to defer to him. So my guess is it was just a dance that they both did. He, being a Japanese man, was, I'm sure, expecting certain things that he did not get. So he did not get a polite, submissive, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
And did she go on after the divorce in later years to remarry, and was she reestablished with her family in a good way, do you think?
Oh, I think she was immediately reestablished with her family. It's not clear to me that they ever were broken off, but she just wasn't there. But when she came back, no. I think she moved in with her mother for a while. The family was just geographically so close. My grandmother had a first cousin, Cousin Sue, who was in the family sort of estate. They were very close, so there's no sign that she wasn't accepted. And did she remarry? No.
And when did she pass away, and is she buried in this area?
She is buried in the Paris Cemetery, as are my parents. Yeah.
And how old was she when she passed?
She was in her late 40s, very young.
What happened?
She actually died from diabetes. Oh. So she had diabetes. It was a time when they didn't have the medicine we do.
Yeah.
She became blind.
Oh, no.
so that people, and including members of the extended family, right, would come and stay the night with her and stuff. But again, no complaining.
What year were we talking about there that she passed, Steve?
I think it was 35, but I'm not sure. 1935, yeah.
Well, Rose, thank you very much for your honest, and it brought some emotion out of you, and certainly going to watch the performance tonight, and thank you for sharing.
Thank you. It's been an honor.